Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
1 Kings, not by chance. This is the last segment to preach in 1 Kings. Next week we will be doing a review of the whole book. We have to remember, too, as we think about that, 1 Kings and 2 Kings used to be one scroll, but it was too big, so they made it two scrolls, and it became 1 Kings and 2 Kings. So we are going to stop in the middle of a story. In due time, we will get there. I hope one of the things that you have seen through this study is God is in control of this world. Someday we will do a study on the sovereignty of God. But for now, suffice it to say, God's in control. Mankind has a free will, but God's in control. We're going to see that tonight, and that's hence the title, Not by Chance. Our last study, we saw that the majority was wrong. 400 false prophets against Micaiah, and the majority was wrong. Tonight we're going to consider not by chance. 1 Kings chapter 22, verses 29 through 53. Please let us read. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up from Ramoth-Gilead. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and enter into the battle. But put thou on thy robes. And the king of Israel disguised himself, and he went into the battle. But the king of Syria commanded his 32 captains that had rule over his chariots, saying, Fight neither with small nor great, save only with the king of Israel. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, that they said, Surely it is the king of Israel. And they turned aside to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots perceived that it was not the king of Israel, that they turned back from pursuing him. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, Turn thine hand and carry me out of the host, for I am wounded. And the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians and died at even. And the blood ran out of the wound into the midst of the chariot. And there went a proclamation throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, Every man to his city, and every man to his own country. So the king died, and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria. And one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood. And they washed his armor, according unto the word of the Lord which he spake. Now the rest of the acts of Ahab, and all that he did, and the ivory house which he made, and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Ahab slept with his fathers, and Ahaziah, his son, reigned in his stead. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhai. And he walked in all the ways of Asa his father. He turned not aside from it, doing that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away, for the people offered and burnt incense yet in the high places. And Jehoshaphat made peace with the king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoshaphat, and his might, that he showed, and how he warred, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And the remnant of the Sodomites, which remained in the lands of his father Asa, he took out of the land. There was then no king in Edom, a deputy was king. Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold, but they went not, for the ships were broken at Ezion-Geber. Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, unto Jehoshaphat, Let my servants go with thy servants in the ships. But Jehoshaphat would not. And Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers, and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father, and Jehoram his son reigned in his stead. Ahaziah the son of Ahab began to reign over Israel and Samaria the 17th year of Jehoshaphat king of Judah, and reigned 2 years over Israel. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and walked in the way of his father, and in the way of his mother, and in the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. For he served Baal, and worshipped him, and provoked the anger of the Lord God of Israel, according all to that his father had done. So here we have this battle with Syria, and herein Ahab will die. His death and conclusion of life are listed here, and there are some concluding thoughts about the parallel kingdoms and their reign. Our last study ended with 1 Kings 22, verse 28, and Micaiah, "If thou return at all in peace, the Lord hath not spoken by me," and it goes on now into this next battle. So we have concluded two battles where Syria attacked Israel, and in both cases, God showed his hand mighty before Ahab, giving him the tremendous victory. The whole point was so that Ahab would know that he was the Lord God. This time, Israel's going to attack Syria and will lose, and Ahab will die. Some people just don't get it. Israel here is the aggressor, and they will lose. Chapter 22, verse 29, "So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead." So here they've now joined with the southern kingdom of Judah has joined the northern kingdom to go to reclaim territory, Ramoth-Gilead. If you will, it's another contest, but this time it's not on Mount Carmel, where it was Elijah, the prophet, against the 400. Now it's against Micaiah, against the new 400, on a battlefield. Which one's truth? Wasn't this already settled on Mount Carmel? King Jehoshaphat foolishly agreed to go with King Ahab. Verse 30, "And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself." Right there were flares all over the place. But I do believe that when people are in sin, they're blinded. "And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and enter into the battle, and put thou on thy robes." Now you dress up like a king, okay? "And the king of Israel disguised himself and went into the battle." Quote, "How could King Jehoshaphat not discern what Ahab was doing to him? If Ahab had put a target on Jehoshaphat's back, he would not have made it any easier for the enemy to kill him. If Jehoshaphat had died, then his son would have taken the throne, and Ahab's daughter would have been the Jezebel of Judah." Remember we covered that last week? That there was a marriage between the royal family of the kingdom of Judah and the family, the kingdom of Israel? This is coming together now. We're getting into this battle. "If Jehoshaphat had died, then his son would have taken the throne, and Ahab's daughter would have been the Jezebel of Judah. If Ahab then united the two thrones and blended the Davidic line with his own line, what would have happened to the Davidic covenant and the Messianic line? But God is sovereign in all things and protected Jehoshaphat, while at the same time allowing a random arrow to hit an opening in Ahab's armor and kill him. Ahab was disguised and yet was killed, while Jehoshaphat was in his royal robes and was never touched. Ahab had set the king of Syria free when he should have destroyed him." Remember that? He should have slain Ben-Hadad. This is the same Syrian king that he fought before. Believably, this wouldn't have happened. We don't know for sure. Verses 31, let's start there. "But the king of Syria commanded his 32 captains that had rule over his chariots, saying, Fight neither with small nor great, save only with the king of Israel. And it came to pass when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat that they said, Surely it is the king of Israel. And they turned aside to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out." His foolishness has gotten himself into a very dangerous position, and he realizes this, and he cries out in the midst of battle, Hey, everybody's coming at me because he's the only one on the battlefield that's dressed in royal garb. And he cries out. Let us look at a parallel passage in 2 Chronicles 18:31. And it came to pass when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat that they said, "It is the king of Israel." Therefore they compassed about him to fight. He was completely surrounded. But Jehoshaphat cried out, and the Lord helped him, and God moved them to depart from him. God is in control, God is in control, God is in control. He is completely surrounded on the battlefield. They're not fighting with anybody else. And even though he is in a sinful alliance, he cried out, and God still says, "I'm there." Does that give you a little comfort? When we do things wrong and you cry out to God? The Syrians were seeking to kill King Ahab, and somehow, we don't know how, but God divinely made it that they recognized that's not the king of Israel. And it came to pass when the captains of the chariots perceived that it was not the king of Israel, that they turned back from pursuing him. Surely it was God who spared him at that time. We must, when you read these passages, see that God is in control. I remember many years ago when I did my main study on the sovereignty of God, the overwhelming thought that hit me was, I have preached all around this and never focused on it. God is in control. All the time and of everything, and yes, he gave us a free will, but that's not for this study right now. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Wherefore he said unto the driver, "Turn thine hand and carry me out of the host, for I am wounded." Here Ahab is wounded by an undirected arrow in the middle of a chaotic battle. There are no coincidences. He can turn all of the soldiers that have surrounded Jehoshaphat, he can turn them away. And he can take some soldier who launches an arrow, and it divinely hits the weak spot on Ahab's armor and gives him a fatal wound. Consider the precautions taken by Ahab to avoid Micaiah's prophecy of death coming true. Remember, he was foretold by Micaiah, "You're going to die in this battle." Well, let's look at this. He disguised himself. He had another dressed like the king to deceive the enemy. He rode in a chariot to move quicker from danger. He hid in the confusion of battle. He had another person drive the chariot so he could watch out for danger. He wore armor to protect himself. And despite of all these, an arrow found the weak point, and he was fatally wounded. Did you ever stop and think about the guy that shot that arrow? He has no idea that he killed the king, or at least fatally wounded him. He won't die for several hours. Sometimes you will do things in this life and God will use it and you have no idea. Something that is so random. And God says, "I am so powerful, I can turn that to use." And so it is, this man launches this arrow. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, "Turn thine hand and carry me out of this host, for I am wounded." Quote, "The cup of Ahab's sins was full, and the arrow at a venture executed divine retribution." Had Micaiah not spoken, men would have attributed this apparently to chance, that the arrow is of misfortune. Now, however, it became invested with quite another significance. There is no such thing as chance in this world. The bird does not fall to the ground. The arrow does not find its way to the heart without a superintending providence. We must find peace in that, that God is in control and he can turn the king's heart whithersoever he will. as the rivers of water. We must realize that we were born in time and space according to God's divine plan. When the events of life come against you, God knew it long before this world was ever founded. And He still knows everything, and He knows all about you. And I know this can be the brunt of many jokes, but it ought to be a statement of great comfort. God knows the hairs on your head. That's how much He knows you. And He loves you. I'm glad that God isn't going to find out something about me. I'm glad He already knows. And that ought to be peace to all of us. Jehoshaphat almost died as he was pursued by the Syrians. His foolish alignment with King Ahab nearly cost him his life. Yet he cried out, and God heard him. But Ahab had no warning of this random arrow coming. He has been hit. He's been asked to be taken aside. And verse 35, and the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians and died at even. And the blood ran out of the wound into the midst of the chariot. And 400 prophets heard the prophecy, you're going to die. He lived long enough after his fatal wound to know that Micaiah's prophecy came true. Ahab lived to see the battle increased that day. He saw many people die because of his sin. Verse 36, and there went a proclamation throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, every man to his city and every man to his own country. Do you remember the prophecy of Micaiah? He said, I saw all Israel scattered upon hills as sheep that have not a shepherd. This is where it is. They're going home to the hills. Go home. But you don't have a shepherd. He's dead. There is no indication of any mourning or any sorrow at Ahab's death. Leaders are to be blessings when they live, not when they die. Verse 37, so the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria. We don't read of any mourning. You read in the Bible, and people mourned at great length at some people's death. And there was some people's death, and they buried him. And one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood, and they washed his armor, according unto the word of the Lord which he spake. You can make a note there, 1 Kings chapter 21, verse 19, are those words which he spoke, foretelling that the dogs were going to lick his blood. God is in control. God can foretell the future. And he's always right. He can bring fire from heaven. He can stop soldiers from surrounding the king. The acts of Ahab, are they not written in the book? Verse 39, now the rest of the acts of Ahab and all that he did and the ivory house which he made and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? Folks, everybody's deeds are written down in a book in heaven. God keeps the perfect score. I do believe that God records things like this, yes, so we know to read them, but also to provoke us to thought, as God has recorded every deed in His perfect record, He's counted every deed and every thought. Let that be a sober warning. Here it says, let us consider the great things which he did. He built many cities to house people and it provided jobs. And that is quite an accomplishment. It says he built an ivory house. I marvel where you get that much ivory. But none of those accomplishments matter in eternity. Ahab concerned himself with earthly matters and cared not for eternal things. And Ahaziah, Ahab's son, became the king of Israel. Verse 40, so Ahab slept with his fathers, and Ahaziah, his son, reigned in his stead. And now here God gives us a brief record of Jehoshaphat's record. Starting at verse 41, And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhi. And he walked in all the ways of Asa his father, he turned not aside from it, doing that was right in the sight of the Lord. Nevertheless, the high places were not taken away, for the people offered and burnt incense yet in the high places. And Jehoshaphat made peace with the king of Israel. That wasn't the problem. The problem was the alignment together. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoshaphat, that his might that he showed and how he warred, are they not written in the books of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And the remnant of Sodomites, which remained in the days of his father, Asa, he took out of the land. It was a sin then, it's a sin now. There was then no king in Edom, a deputy was king. And Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir for gold. But they went not, for the ships were broken at Ezion-Geber. Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, unto Jehoshaphat, let my servants go with thy servants in the ships. But realizing he's blown it enough, he says, but Jehoshaphat would not. No, I'm not aligning with you. So here we have Jehoshaphat living to be 60 years old, not old, fairly young for a man to die. He had good deeds as well as he had evil deeds. He walked in the way of Asa his father, but he did not take down the high places. He removed the Sodomites. He walked in the way of Asa his father and in the eyes of the Lord. But he had his faults. And he did lead Judah, reasonably so. It's interesting, it says there was no king in Edom, a deputy was king. The Edomites of old have been an enemy to Israel, descendants of Esau, Jacob's brother. They didn't have a king. I believe that what this is saying is Jehoshaphat said, no, you're not going to be your own separate little kingdom. I'm putting a deputy over you guys. And I'm going to control you because you've been a problem throughout the years. Ahaziah tried to form an alliance with Jehoshaphat for shipping. Ezion-Geber is on the very southern point of Israel, going into the other part of the globe, not into the Mediterranean, but rather it took them down south towards Africa, towards India. And it says then, Eleazar, the son of Dovida, I'm in 2 Chronicles 20, verse 37. This is a parallel passage from Chronicles. It gives a little bit more detail that really sheds light on this. Then Eleazar, the son of Dodava of Marisha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, because thou hast joined thyself with Ahaziah, the Lord hath broken thy works. And the ships were broken, that they were not able to go to Tarshish. There's not a whole lot told about this incredible shipping venture, but we know this. Somehow God in his infinite power and wisdom punished him and broke all those ships. It was God, once again, working. Here they expected to be able to go out and bring back gold. Instead, they had a bunch of broken ships. It would have been better if Jehoshaphat would have been taught by God's word rather than by his own experiences. Quote, the great defect of Jehoshaphat's character was the ease with which he associated himself with Ahab and his family, for this subsequent generations paid a heavy penalty. Folks, we must be careful because what we do will affect to the fourth generation. Be ye not unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness and unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness? Verse 50, and Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David his father, and Jehoram his son reigned in his stead. Ahaziah will only rule for 2 years, and he will sin just as wickedly as his fathers did. He failed to learn from his father. He failed to learn from the experiences. I have to believe he knew about the contest on Mount Carmel. I have to believe that he knew about Micaiah and the prophecy of this battle. He chose to ignore them. Rather, he followed the wicked ways of his mother, Jezebel. Even the palace could not protect Ahaziah from all the evil that was influencing him. Better yet is the family that lives in God and His will, whether they have much or little. Blessed is the home that has the Lord. The duration of his reign, Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and only reigned 2 years. He was a wicked king, verses 52 and 53. He did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father and in the way of his mother and in the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. For he served Baal and worshipped him and provoked to anger the Lord God of Israel according to all that his father had done. These are God's people. If I could encourage you anything to put a summary conclusion on this, do you see the incredible interaction between God and the powers of heaven on the deeds of this earth? Do you see the incredible importance of looking to God? Do you see that this is not a game? Do you see that God really is in control and he can take a random arrow and guide it? Do we see the incredible power of God? Do we see how God truly does bless those that do right before him, and God does chasten those that do opposite and they do evil? This is the recurring theme, and these are God's people. This is supposed to be the light to the world. And this is how they're behaving? Do you realize how merciful God is? He chose Israel. He said, I'm going to bless you, and the world is going to look and see, and they're going to want to come to you and find out, what do you have? This is the way it's supposed to be. But they didn't. They sought their own wicked ways. And this is what happens. These are written for our consideration and our admonition.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.